Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And there it is, the cue. Getaway Friday for the truth teller. Gonna be hiding on the back streets, Yeah, you'll never find me. In and out, here and there, golf, beach, golf. Cold beer, hot women, or cold women, hot beer. I don't know. Either or. Count me in. It begins in T-minus 2 hours. I already got some folks coming in here. Here's one on our text line, 641-1010, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. 9247 says, happy Tullamore Dew Friday, Rick. Why, thank you, the 9247. Got out real early this morning. I was up at 6:30 this morning. Had an 8 a.m. Golf tournament with the good folks over at GFL, which began at 8. And I got to tell you, that whole spring, it's done. It's gone. It's summer. And I never complained about it. I moved down here for the heat. Some will say the politics. I'm going to say the heat, okay? I moved down here for it. And it's here, man. It is absolutely awesome outside. But you got to hydrate yourself, man. Constant Pedialytes and waters and Gatorades or Powerades or whatever it is that you need in order to keep your hydration and to get going. But I find myself again here. It is only the third day of May, and absolutely, I'm going to need a summer drink. You know, I'm so stodgy. I'm so, you know, when you ask Judge Schmales, odd, even, you know, flip the coin, he's odd. I'm just so regular. I'm just a regular guy. There's nothing fancy about me. There's no me going up and ordering a Tanqueray and tonic or a gin and tonic or, you know, an old school 7-7 or a Captain Morgan. No, I'm the same old, same old. I'll take a Miller Lite and a shot of Irish whiskey. When I start to get crazy, it's Guinness. Well, I got news for you. When it's 100 degrees out and you're playing golf, a Guinness isn't the most refreshing thing in the world that you get from the cart girl. So, yeah, I've tried those. Are they transfusions? I've tried them. They're not bad. Vodka, ginger ale, splash of, I think it's lime juice, splash of, is it maybe grapefruit juice or cherry juice or something like that? Let's see, I don't even know 100%. But, you know, this is a getaway weekend for me. I'll be gone all next week. So if you can help me out with a brand new spirit on this Friday, a little bit of a self-serving moment here to get things cranked up. It is appreciated. I'm always one who will give it a try, right? I mean, I have that in common with the Jaguars, right? I'm like Mikey. The Jaguars are like Mikey. You want to give the Jaguars all these gains, play it in different parts of the world, they'll do it. No question about it. So, appreciate that, and going to be a lot of fun. Got some great things planned over the next 2 hours. That includes Dave Campo, who's 25 minutes away. His thoughts on the Jaguars, particularly what they've done now defensively, as well as Niall Lawrence Stample, won a national title, part of that defensive line. We'll get some input from him coming up at 7 o'clock as well. OBJ to Miami. I'd like to say who cares. I would like to say it'll never work. It won't be worth the cash. You know, he's a diva. Something will happen. He'll get injured. There'll be an issue. There'll be a problem. And, of course, his teammate at LSU, Jarvis Landry, he's going to work out here in 9 days. And when I do return that Sunday and Monday, will be Jaguars rookie minicamp over at the Miller Electric Center. So my first show back, I'm going to have, you know, two opportunities to observe these rookies, and that'll include the 31-year-old Jarvis Landry and whether or not he's going to make this team. And it really feels like, you know, percentage-wise, I wouldn't bet it. I wouldn't bet it with your money. But obviously Jacksonville's going to have to make a couple of moves here. I just don't think they can go into training camp with the wide receiving core that they do have. You're asking too much out of guys like Parker Washington, Devin Duvernay, where you're expecting a reemergence there from him. And then the, you know, the Tim Jones, the Seth Williams, the Elijah Cooks. I kind of promised myself I wasn't going to waste a lot of time talking about those players this year because I spent way too much of it a year ago. And they just didn't do anything when it was all said and done. Don't get me wrong. If the Jaguars took the field on Sunday, their team is set. This is a really good team. This is a winning football team. They could add a piece here and add a piece there, but that's for depth, right? They've got their starting 22. And if you go to a three wide receiver set or a two tight end set or your base defense or you add your nickel cornerback, let's say it's your starting 12 and 12, you're starting 24, right? They're set. They've got a good roster, okay? Health is an issue, but it's an issue for all 32 teams in the National Football League. And, you know, what becomes interesting with this is where are they going to try to get better? As far as I'm concerned, there are three pretty obvious positions. Wide receiver, we just talked about. They're going to have to bring in at least one more guy. 2 years in a row, Trent Baalke is elected not to address pass rush defensive end in the draft. He did it with a fifth rounder last year, Yasir Abdullah, undersized, had 45 snaps. Okay, that's what he gave you. 45 snaps in 17 games. You go out this year, you get the Cole kid, you know, the body looks amazing. And a couple of analysts, including Damian Parson, who joined us last night, actually thinks that when it's all said and done, he's better suited to move inside than actually be an outside guy. And that's what's going to be just, you know, every year it's offense. To me, this year it's going to be a little bit more, all right, what's going on with this defense? You know, how many of these guys are interchangeable? How many of these guys can just sit and play one position? Or with Ryan Nielsen and what he's putting together now with this staff, how much maneuverability, how much flexibility does this defense have? Do players on this defense have? Feels like there's a tremendous amount of that in the secondary, right? Guys who can do multiple things. Savage can do multiple things. Antonio Johnson can do multiple things. Ronald Darby's been inside as of late, can also play outside, right? You went out and got Jarian Jones at Mississippi State. He played outside. At Florida State, he did different positions. Last year, clearly in the slot, a nickel guy who is very good against the run, makes big plays, also great in coverage. I learned about this just to get away from it for a second. How did I miss out on the personality of Keon Coleman? Did Florida State keep him in wraps? Or is it just standard Q&A? Hey, what do you think about your chances on Saturday? Hey, can you tell us about when you ran? Oh, let me think here. A go route. Okay. You folks down here call it a go route. Okay. But you have been down here for more than half your life. You should probably get their language correct. It's route. Okay. Where did the personality come from? He's like off the wall, like giving candy to members of the media, talking about his yellow jacket. I mean, the next thing you know, he's going to be like Carl Everett and tell us, you know, the world is flat and that there were no dinosaurs. I love the personality. I just didn't know anything about it. It's all new to me. And, you know, I understand that things have changed in the world of college football where media access to assistant coaches and players are not like they once were. Back in the day, college football was just like pro football. Certainly after games, going into the locker room, but as well getting an opportunity to talk with the sports information directors and say, hey, I'd like to talk to Charlie Ward, Tamarick Vanover, you know, whoever else, Carl Simpson, Dan Footman, Stan Shiver, bring them out. I'm shocked by this. I didn't know Keon Coleman had that much pizzazz. I mean, what a guy. And for what it's worth, if you heard the Jarian Jones presser, it was late. It was around midnight. I think it was, what, Friday night, midnight? Infectious. personality. I mean, here's a guy that if he plays the way that he talks, if he plays the way that he acts, he is going to be a huge fan favorite here. But you know what? In my opinion, Ke'Lavon Chaisson was that way. I don't know of anyone who dislikes Ke'Lavon Chaisson. I don't know of anyone who didn't enjoy limited conversations with him. His personality was certainly one that could take off. But, you know, in this league, that goes away quickly. You better be able to play. If not, no one's going to care. No one's going to go up and is going to, in fact, talk to you. So, anyway, pass rush end, absolutely. I mean, Trent Baalke has to be totally up to date on this, and he's got to be looking at everything that he has. And, you know, as far as the salary cap, man, $34 million right now Jacksonville has. You know, they're going to have to use $8 or $9 million of that on their rookies, and we'll see if they do end up getting a deal done with Trevor Lawrence. It feels more and more and more and more like that's going to happen. That's not a shock to you. I've talked about it for quite some time, and I know others have here as well on the flagship of the Jacksonville Jaguars. But you can't make the same mistake twice in both ends, if you will. Last year, Baalke didn't address it in the draft until the fifth round. Didn't address it at all during the offseason, right? Who'd he bring back? DeJuan Smoot. Smoot today signed in Buffalo. Consummate professional. I mean, just wish him the best. Right? About 100 games here, 23 and a half sacks, tried to battle back from that brutal injury. He was nowhere near the same. Maybe he will be for Buffalo coming up during the 2024 season. But he made a mistake in the draft, and then he really made an egregious mistake during free agency, where you had money and you had bodies, right? You had bodies. This year, same deal, draft. Didn't address it, not until the seventh round, with a guy that, in Miles Cole, right now you can't expect anything from him. Nothing. Zilch. Is Trent Baalke going to walk it back again with this same defensive line? I mean, all you have to do is say, in a pinch, if Allen needs a blow, if Walker needs a blow, if any one of those two are not 100%, and you're in a pass rush situation, who are you going to ask to go to the outside and rush the quarterback? Okay? Your choices right now are the two that I just mentioned and Travis Gibson. That's what you got. Now, Gibson worked with Bill Shuey a few years ago in Chicago. All right? Much like Matt House, who came over, the former defensive coordinator from LSU. You bring over all these LSU guys, you know they were absolutely picking his brain. And he signed off on Mason Smith. He signed off on Jordan Jefferson. It's not the reason why Trent Baalke took those players, but certainly his input makes a difference. You know, Rauscher's input on bringing back a healthy Ezra Cleveland. Yes, it factors in. Well, the same thing factors in here. You got to believe with Bill Shuey, who survived the bloodletting, right? He was one of the few who got to stick on that defensive staff. A lot of people think that Travis Gibson could end up being something. You know, Adam Kaplan, who joined us midweek, said he's a fourth pass rusher. Who's your third? Go out and get him. So they brought in a corner this week to work. You're bringing in a 31-year-old wide receiver in 10 days to see what he can do in Jarvis Landry. No report yet with a defensive end, but you got to believe that that is going to happen at one point. For what it's worth, and to me, it's worth everything. You know, I kind of, you know what I love about the writers? I love their effort. And there's really good writers in town, good effort individuals in town. And I say that with all sincerity because I try to do it the right way. Whenever I take material from them, I'm kind of old school. Yeah, I'll credit them. You know, I actually will. If I go someplace and I get it, I will use them because they put their hard work into it. But it feels like the writers now have all put together the way too early 53-man projection, right? I love it. I absolutely love it. I can't get enough of that stuff. Give it to me. I don't care if it's early May. And what I'm seeing here that surprises me more than anything is the defensive line. I just talked about the need to get at least one pass rusher. Well, every time I look at the defensive line, one noticeable absence from each and every one of these way too early 53-man projections that I've read. That's Tyler Lacy, fourth-round pick in 2023. Is he a dog? Okay? And I don't mean a dog, D-A-W-G. I don't mean dog as in good. Like, you know, bad is good, dog is good. I mean just a dog, okay? I mean, is he not a good football player? I've been saying many times over the summer, what a wonderful opportunity for Tyler Lacy, because no one's talking about him. Whenever we get to last year's draft class, it's Anton Harrison that's up, and then it's like, okay, Brenton Strange, Tank Bigsby, colossal misses. Then you get the Ventro Miller and Tyler Lacy, and I'm like, hold on him. Those four guys, I'm already back on the Tank Bigsby bandwagon. I have been the entire offseason. I think he's gonna wake up, okay? Wake up. Be a pro. You've got God-given ability. Wake up. You know, and who knows? I think it's going to work. I may be wrong. Brenton Strange, I just don't know. I don't think there's enough footballs to go around. You know, maybe at this point in his career, he had to work on becoming a better pass-blocking tight end or run-blocking tight end, even though Luke Farrell's there. Still, I think he's going to have a better year. Those fourth-rounders are ultimate wild cards. Ventro Miller had a red shirt. He's coming back. There's room for a backup linebacker, right? And again, you just never know health-wise. And then you get the Lacy. It's kind of like lost. It's like, man, did they really use a fourth-round draft pick on Tyler Lacy? Doesn't matter where you go and read these projections, he's not on there. I'll tell you who else is not on there. Adam Gotsis, who's become a veteran, who in a pinch, you can ask to spell someone. In my opinion there, Jacksonville can do better. This is at the point in your career, or this is at the point with this organization where you've got, for the most part, stars at the most important positions. This is about providing depth. This is about getting better 1 through 53. Can you get better than Adam Gotsis? There's been times where Adam Gotsis has done some nice things. Batted down a ball, gotten to a quarterback. He's going to give you what? 12 plays a game, 15, 18, maybe 20 plays a game. Can you get better from someone else? Jeremiah Ledbetter, best year of his seven seasons last year in Jackson. These three are not on the list. So if you're cutting three guys who have, and Tyler Lacy hasn't, but if you're cutting Ledbetter and Gotsis, you're talking about guys with a tremendous amount of NFL experience who you will not have making this team. Now, you have practice squad opportunities and whatever. Of course, guys get placed on IR, and there's all sorts of ways that you can kind of move your way through the 53-man roster. But the point I'm trying to make, you look at it that way on paper, it looks like it's a deep position group with your defensive starting four. But as I said at the beginning, you can get fooled. You can Adam Gotsis me. You can Jeremiah Ledbetter me. I'll Tyler Lacy you just because I feel like it. But what in the hell are you going to do in pass situations if Allen or Walker cannot play? Who's going to get after the quarterback? You had three by your backup defensive ends a year ago, and you had three by your interior defensive line a year ago. I have to believe the interior defensive line this year is going to be so much better. I mean, you get Eric Armstead. Now, listen, he's not 100%. He's missed 13 games in the last 2 years. You bring back Devon Hamilton, who was an absolute freak. He was a star in the month of August at the Miller Electric Center, but that back ailment, or that was brutal. He was really never the same. So I guess you kind of have to put a question mark by him. Mason Smith. I mean, they're comparing him to Chris Jones, Mason Smith. Has there been a bigger variety as far as what is this guy going to be able to bring? Again, our guest analyst last night, our NFL draft analyst, Damian Parson, was like, I couldn't believe they selected him in the second round. Another guy, torn ACL in 2022. Did not feel himself until, you know, very late during the 2023 season. Freak athlete. It was a writer we had on yesterday. Was it Ron Higgins? JJ from TigerDetails.com?
Yeah, Ron Higgins.
Said he's totally cut. Totally put together, cut as a 305-pound defensive lineman, Mason Smith. Said he's a great kid. He's an effort guy. This is a huge wild card. So, yeah, the run defense is absolutely going to be better. And you would also think that they're going to be able to get some sort of interior push with that defensive line. But anyway, this is just kind of my long-winded way of saying, Trent Baalke, bring in a pass rusher. You have the financial support for it, and you have a 90-man roster. Bring in a guy. Create a little bit more competition. Pay him some cash. See what he can do. And that is really the only position I look at right now and say, head and shoulders, you have to bring in one. Again, I'd like to see another wide receiver. I would not mind seeing another veteran corner if those were the three. But those, you know, two and three may be more of a luxury or maybe more of just depth. I actually think going out and getting the right guy at defensive end is someone who can play for the Jaguars on Sunday. All right, so we got a lot to do here over the next couple of hours. It's going to be just a great night and a great weekend in sports. I mean, this is basically what it's all about, okay? You get to the NBA and the NHL playoffs, and we're only in the first round, but it's absolutely incredible. You get what's happening tonight in the National Hockey League as my computer goes helter-skelter here on me. But, you know, you look tonight, both road teams, an opportunity to win. And not only win, but clinch the series for one reason or another. We've never been able to figure it out. But in the National Hockey League, road teams seem to have more, if not much more success than actual home teams. Vancouver tonight can win in Nashville, clinch that series. The Stars can win tonight. They've responded in this series. In Las Vegas against the defending Stanley Cup champion, Las Vegas Golden Knights. So both road teams tonight on the road, up 3-2, an opportunity to clinch out west. Of course, Toronto, a winner last night over Boston. They can do it again tomorrow on a Saturday. 2 years in a row. Boston up 3-1. They could lose games 2, 5, and 7 at the Garden. The Magic trying to hold serve tonight as well as we get to the NBA, even up that series at 3-3. And, of course, the Dallas Mavericks with a 3-2 lead against the Los Angeles Clippers. That is late night. So we have two huge games in the NBA. Could be clinching games for Cleveland and Dallas, and two huge games in the NHL, where road teams could win tonight and clinch as well. So we'll keep you updated on the early games, and certainly get ready for those nightcaps on a brilliant Friday night in the world of the NHL and NBA. Dave Campo is next. Let's get his thoughts on not adding a pass rush defensive end. Let's get his thoughts on the players that this team addressed defensively, including the twosome out of LSU, as well as the slot back out of Florida State in Jarian Jones. All that is coming up. First things first, let me tell you that opening comments each and every night are brought to you by the good folks over at Schmunez Vision. All right. Again, play golf today, the GFL tournament. Out there with a couple of guys. Had no idea when it came to yardage. What is that, 140, 150? I'm like, no, man, that's like 180. You know, or the exact opposite. It's just it pains me because I recommend this all the time. It just amazes how people will put away doing something for themselves when it comes to their eyes. You need to go to the very best in Jacksonville. That's Schmunez Vision. Check them out online. Go to Schmunez Vision, talking about a high-quality medical and surgical eye care practice right here in your backyard. I've been going to them forever, and I will continue to go to them because they are simply the best. Check them out by going to Schmunez Vision Care. You can see. All right, we got a ton to do. We do tonight till 8, along with J.J. LaSalva. My name is Rick Bullitt.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
About a moment ago, told you Dewan Smoot signed in Buffalo today after 7 years here. Also a former Jaguar, has been gone for a couple of years, but DJ Chark has signed on with the Los Angeles Chargers. So that rolled in today as well. Our guest is Dave Campo, formerly a coach here, formerly a coach with the U, formerly the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, but he's our friend on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. How you doing, Dave?
I'm good. Rick, how's it going?
Man, everything's great. Fantastic. All right, overall, top to bottom, how did you grade the Jaguars draft class?
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, it's very difficult to do that, obviously, because you're going to get different opinions all over the place. But I would say a lot depends on the upside of some of these guys, and that looks like to be Trent Baalke's way of doing business. You look back to the Walker situation. And I think this is a draft like that. But at the same time, as you look through the entire draft, there's a reason behind each one of those picks. So to me, it'll come down to what happens this year, but I would give them really close, to, at least a B+. And if a guy like Mason Smith comes through and the kid from Florida, Jorian Jones, it could be an A very easily, because I think the first round pick is outstanding. And I think that there's a reason for all the other picks. I'm hoping that it's going to be an A- before it's all over.
Is the reason length?
As far as?
Well, I mean, just all of these guys seem long. They hit the measurements that Baalke loves, you know, the wingspan, the hands, just every. Is that what you mean? Or do you think these are a replacement as far as starters?
Oh, no, I think that they're guys that can be future starters. You know, at least the first four picks, then the others, there's a reason for them. You go all the way to Little, you know, he's got a chance. He's a pretty darn good kicker. So to me, I think that they picked guys that fill out positions that have a chance of an upside of being a really good football player in the league.
Mm-hmm. Mason Smith is so intriguing here. I mean, the best of the best out there have said Chris Jones that he's comparable to. Others say, wow, what a reach. You could have had him in the third round and still not 100% after tearing his ACL back in 2022. What did you make of the pick here for the defensive tackle out of LSU?
Well, if you just look at prognosticators, it's probably a little bit of a reach. But at the same time, they have a lot of in common between the guys that have done business at LSU and our coaching staff. For example, Ed Ogeron, who, you know, was a GA for us in Miami back in the day, an outstanding defensive line coach. I talked to Ed after the draft, and Ed said, listen, usually a second year after an ACL is a pretty good situation for guys. He says this guy could be a top 10 pick if he becomes what he's capable of becoming. And Ed is one of the guys that Nielsen has looked to in his coaching career.
Yeah.
So you look at the fact that's there. Plus you got Matt House in there that was with the guy. Then you look at the fact that he's had five defensive line coaches during his time at LSU. And then you add to that, they brought in Pete Jenkins last year, who was kind of was an outstanding football coach, but now is kind of a trainer. And Jenkins is one of the best in the business. So I think this kid has an upside that makes that a good pick. Remember this, go back to the Jimmy Johnson theory, okay? And his theory is, and I'm sure other people have the same theory, including me now, that if you're going to take a chance on a guy with an injury, make it the second year after that and make it in the second round if you've got a guy that you think is really a first-round capable player that has slipped for one reason or another.
Interesting. Very interesting point. That's Dave Campo. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, he was on the sideline as the defensive backs coach back in 1987 with Jimmy Johnson when Florida State went for two and Bubba McDowell knocked down the Danny McManus pass. I was in the 87th row at Doak Campbell Stadium. All right, everything I hear about Mason Smith, and it's only been a few people that I've spoken with, but apparently he's a tremendous human being. Very coachable, ripped. I mean, you look at him, 6'6", 300-plus. I'm told, like, no body fat. So he's got, I guess, all the tools in the shed. And he's also coming in now to a better defensive line. You know, Walker got better. Allen got his money. You bring in Eric Armstead. Devon Hamilton, if he's 100%, is going to be that much better. So all of a sudden, I look at that defensive line as far as the starters of the rotation. Looks a lot better than it did a year ago.
Absolutely. And I think that that was one of the reasons that they took both he and Ferguson, because, you know, Ferguson in the fourth round is a pretty good pick, too. As a matter of fact, if you just said, you know, I'm talking about with the media now and all the prognosticators, if you said which one of those two guys got picked where most people would say they were picked, Ferguson would be the guy.
You mean Jefferson?
Round.
Jordan Jefferson.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Jefferson.
Right.
I'm getting old.
No. Continue on.
Yeah, I'm just saying that, you know, he's a big guy that's very physical. I watched both of those guys on a little bit of tape here since the draft, and both of them are very physical. So at the very least, let's say Mason Smith is kind of like Trayvon Walker. It takes him another year before he really, his upside starts to show up.
Yes.
Well, you've already got two guys in the rotation that are more physical than the guys you had in there. And so stopping the run is going to be big as far as this defense is concerned, to make sure that they can line up with some, you know, even guys like Lloyd to rush the pass.
Jarian Jones selected in the third round as a Florida State grad. I watched his, you know, career at Florida State after he transferred over from Mississippi State. The secondary in the defense as a whole is your forte, but certainly the secondary, this guy's done a variety of different things. He looks like he is a pure nickel slot type of guy. What's your opinion on Jones?
Well, first of all, I think he has the things that you just mentioned about whether or not this draft is a good one or not. He has length. And there's a lot of guys. There's not a lot of guys that have length. I think he's 6 foot, right? Is that
yes.
Is that correct?
Or, yes.
I've seen him play, and he runs sub 4.4. So I mean, you know, when you got speed and length, he reminds me a little of Campbell in a way. You know, he's a guy that I think could play outside. But the thing that separates him is a little bit what you said about the other guys. He's a very good person. He's developed through that program and has become a really, really good football player. And inside, he's very physical and he's an excellent tackler. So I think he gives you a little bit of maybe diversity as far as whether he can play outside or inside.
Yep.
I wouldn't be surprised. I have a feeling that that kid may end up being a starter this year.
I'm sure you had, you know, it's the wrong position, but it almost reminds me of Telvin Smith, who was drafted here about a decade ago. And
right.
The reason why I say that is if you were to just pull over a Florida State fan and say, boy, what a great defense they had last year, name seven or eight guys, they're going to name seven or eight guys before they get to Jarian Jones. They're just
right.
Not going to mention him, but he's such a solid player. You've coached guys like this. He got selected ahead of where most thought he would go. What's it like to bring in a guy like this who's drafted before he is supposed to, but has always been, you know, a guy, not a superstar, not someone that people talk about, but plays his job, you know, plays his role and does his job well?
Well, character is important. I don't care what anybody says. I think that what he brings to the table is puts on a hard hat and plays ball. And the one thing I know about Nielsen, you know, I've got a buddy that was on the staff with him. I know Nielsen pretty well from afar. I don't know him personally, but from what I understand, those are the kind of guys that do well in his scheme and his culture. Mm-hmm. And to me, I think that's important with what he wants to do. If he's going to press the corners a lot, that's why I'm saying that he might be able to go outside, because you don't have to be quite as nifty pressing as you do when you're playing off. Because when you're playing off, the receiver knows where he's going. When you press, you tell him where he's going. And so to me, I think that there's a chance there. But as far as his physicalness and all that and playing inside, I don't have any problems with him. I think they probably maybe tried to move up a little bit to get one, maybe Rakestraw, one of those other guys. But I'm not disappointed at all in Jones and just watch him.
Final moment with former head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, Dave Campo, joining Rick Ballew. All right, Dave, what are they going to do here? Second year in a row, they don't address pass rush end. Their starters are as good as any two in the NFL, but depth is a huge Achilles heel right now, in my opinion. Can they find a veteran out there to bring in before August?
Well, I think there's a couple out there. I mean, Dupree and guys like that. I think they'd be making a mistake if they don't. My feeling would be that, I think Armstead, and again, when you're looking at Armstead now, that's one that is still a little shaky too because of the injury factor over the years. But I look at Armstead a little bit like Calais Campbell. I think Armstead could play outside or inside, if he's 100% and ready to go. But I would prefer them bring in one more guy. I think Gibson gives them somebody that is probably a decent – I've seen him as a decent pass rusher, not great. He's probably not a third. You'd like to bring in somebody that's a third. And I think they would be making a mistake if they don't. Hmm. But, if they've got Gibson there – right now they got Gibson as a three, it looks like, the young kid from came in last year.
Yeah.
Is number four.
Yeah. When you say that, because this is intriguing to me, are you talking about Walker maybe sliding inside, Armstead outside, then Mason Smith inside, Josh Allen outside?
Yeah, I mean, it can happen. I think Armstead, like I said, I think I'm thinking more of you get into a situation where Walker needs a blow on a third down, you could certainly put somebody else out there.
Yeah.
I think on the primetime show the other day, they had Lloyd on there, and Lloyd said he's going to be doing more pass rushing. So if he could be a third pass rusher, I've seen him off the edge. I've seen him at Utah do the things that a guy has to do. So again, I think the one thing that the reputation for Nielsen is to get the most out of the least as far as their ability to get to the passer. So I'm counting on it. I'd like to see him bring in another one, but, you never know at this point.
Tell you what, though, it's been a lot of fun watching this defense this year. It just felt like the last couple of years it was more vanilla, more bland, but and we'll see. I mean, I know that once you, put in your game plans and you keep it a little bit closer to the vest, but it feels like there could be an opportunity to do some really intriguing things on this day.
Well, we're certainly going to need it for sure. I mean, this is that we've got to move from 9-8 to 10-11 this year. I mean, there's no question that this team has got a good enough ball club that as long as the culture is changed towards the end, we've got a chance with this group.
Hey, Dave, thank you as always.
You got it, Rick. Have a great night, and talk to you again.
There he goes, Dave Campo, ladies and gentlemen, formerly the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. Great man. Love watching football with him, especially practice with him during the latter part of July and out throughout August. Sometimes I get a little excited about all this type of stuff. I really do, but let's face it. The last 10 years around here, the defense has been kind of like a mother-in-law who stays way too long, right? We all knew about the Leo and the Otto and Gus and Todd Wash, and they're going to run it this way and run it. I mean, you could be in the 80th row on your 14th Falstaff, and you knew what they were going to do. The Mike Caldwell situation, yeah, same deal. You know, there were times they went three linebackers or three safeties against running teams, but and they were a better defense. They forced a lot of takeaways, right? What was it, 27 both years or something? I mean, they went from 9 to 27 takeaways in the first year with Mike Caldwell. 9 to 27. And the takeaways were very good last year. It was just lost in the fact that Jacksonville themselves offensively turned the ball over way too much. I thought Deshae Townsend should have stayed. I thought he was a really good passing game coordinator. But they've made the changes. It just does. It feels like they're going to be able to do, you know, you always hear about a hybrid defense or exotic blitzes or, come on, we haven't seen that type of stuff in 10 years. So to me, this is going to be a camp, even with the new wide receiver and Trevor probably getting his deal and the expectations of Tank Bigsby in year two and everything else. It just feels like to me that there's going to be a lot of attention on this defense coming up during the 2024 season. All right, we got much more to do. Take you up until 8 o'clock tonight. Some Florida State talk coming up at 7 o'clock with Niall Lawrence Stample. In the meantime, if you don't want to get us, you can, 641-1010. That is the text line brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
College ball coming up here in just a couple of moments. Niall Lawrence Stample will join us. 4704 makes a really good point here. Or he makes an interesting point here. He says, I believe Field Tank is going to take the next step. I expect Trayvon to have that kind of season that makes him hard to re-sign after his rookie deal is up. What do you say? It's a great point, and let's be perfectly clear about this. That's a pleasant problem. Having so many good players that you can't afford to sign them all is a great thing. Okay? Make no mistake about it. This is a team on the come, but it's a team that lacks superstars. It's a team that lacks the elite. Okay. Josh Allen just got paid as one of the elite. Is he? I think he is in town. Is he across the NFL? Who's the second best player on this football team? Foye Oluwakan? Okay. You need stars. Look what happened last year here against Kansas City. Game on the line. A star, Chris Jones, makes a play. Look at a playoff game. They couldn't cover Travis Kelce in the divisional round. Of course, you have Patrick Mahomes. You can go back to Foxborough. 3rd and 18. Was there any doubt that Tom Brady was not going to complete the third? And you need superstars. This organization needs to develop superstars. Okay? Not average, but I battle with you people all the time about Cam Robinson and Walker Little and how there's a $19 million price tag between the two. Come on. They're average. You need a superstar on that offensive line. You need a superstar on that defensive line. You need Trevor Lawrence to turn into a superstar. Great teams have superstars. Super Bowl winning teams have superstars. I'm not talking about making a Pro Bowl or being announced all pro. No, I'm talking about a guy that you can look at and say, there's a star. Who's the last star who's been here? Maurice Jones-Drew? Honestly. Who's the last superstar? Josh Allen just got paid like it. I don't think he's there, and it was the right move. I'm not knocking the move. But if you were to go to a bar right now, they'd tell you about the Boses. They give, you know, Miles Garrett. They bring up Watt. They bring, you know, even though Arnold retired and he's a tackle, they come on. Go to a bar right now in Orlando or Miami or Atlanta or Charlotte. They're not going to give you Josh Allen.
Maybe the quarterback.
Yeah, they're just not going to do it. You need superstars. And that's what it comes down to. Every sport. Guys who make... Every once in a while, there's a Nick Foles. Every once in a while, there's a Elvis Gerback, right? Not Elvis Gerback, Trent Dilfer. Every once in a while, there's one of those, right? But for the most part, no. It's the best since we grew up watching the game. The Steel Curtain defense. Franco Harris, Lynn Swann, John Stallworth, Terry Bradshaw. Mike Webster, a Hall of Fame center. Those great Dallas teams. That incredible defensive line. Roger Staubach, Tony Dorsett. Then it's Emmitt Smith. I mean, the best of the best. Jacksonville needs a couple of superstars. Let's get ready for our second hour. With you for one good hour. That'll be from 7 to 8 right here in your home of the Jags.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
A few of you on the text line are correcting me, and I will always go along with you when it comes to correcting me. Jalen Ramsey is the last superstar. I said Maurice Jones-Drew. Yeah. That ended well. Jalen. Oh, my goodness, man. What could have been. All right, let's bring it. Niall Lawrence Stample, who played college football with Jalen Ramsey, won a national title with Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, sure did.
And my understanding is that, you know, you guys had, you had Darby, you had, who's the little guy? Oh, LaMarcus Joyner. Mm-hmm. You guys had, you know, PJ Williams. You guys had NFL corner. Jalen didn't hold anything back from the moment he arrived.
No, absolutely not. His work ethic is something that is really to be admired. A lot of people, obviously, he's a talkative guy, but when it comes to that work, he puts it in. It is awesome to watch.
I've always heard the story about how Jimbo threw him out of a practice early. It's like he was made a name for himself. I don't know if you remember that. It's 10-plus years ago, or if so, maybe you don't want to get into it. But I love stories like that, especially when they're young freshmen who come in and basically just want to bump someone to the side.
Yeah, man, and that's what he was doing. He came in and he knew he had a lot of development to do, but he knew the base that he had, and it was great, especially as a true freshman. And obviously, it paid off for him early at Florida State.
I love stories like that. Our friend Leon Searcy tells the Warren Sapp the Rock story all the time, where Sapp really came in as a tight end, but they knew he was going to be a defensive lineman, and he sat in the Rock seat, and the Rock said, "Hey, yo, you're in my seat." Warren Sapp was a true freshman, looked at him and said, I'm going to be the starter on this football team. This is my seat." That's what Warren Sapp said to the Rock.
That I believe it, especially knowing Warren Sapp. I definitely believe that.
No doubt. So how you doing, man? You look good. Everything's good in the world of Niall Lawrence Stample.
Yeah, man, everything is great, man. I can't complain, especially with Ted Knowles going in the draft. You can't really complain. So I'm good, man. Everything is great on my side of the fence.
Yeah, it was a great draft for Florida State. We'll get there in one moment. All right, camp has ended. Since we last talked, camp is up. The transfer portal really didn't bring a lot of activity. There's another link where graduate players can leave and come in again. So I still think there'll be some attrition and maybe some transactions. But, you know, I remember asking you a few months ago about how important it would be to get rid of 63-3, get rid of all of the crying by the fans, and deservedly so, but get rid of all that and focus on the task at hand. It feels like as we begin the fifth month, Mike Norvell's done a really good job in that area of not allowing that to linger.
Yeah, man. And it's the understanding of that these guys have to be motivated at all times, and there's no way that they're going to be motivated thinking about a situation like Georgia other than trying to dominate this upcoming season. So it's like the attitude that has to be taken as we're coming into this summer training camp is going to be, let's fuel with this Georgia play, and let's not use it as a crutch to say, oh, hey, well, blame game. Let's be accountable, and let's be great coming into this next season.
Yeah, feels like they got some leadership there, and, you know, we get to the draft class, what, 10 players selected, 8 were from the transfer portal. With my math, right, the only two I can think of who were not transfer drafted selected Seminoles were Renardo Green and Kalen DeLoach. So, you know, that may be another thing that you can look at, whether it's this year, next year, whatever, that whole transfer portal, come here, we'll up your game, and you're going to end up getting drafted. But I want to talk to you now about Jarian Jones. Some were surprised that he went as high as he did in the third round to the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think this is a rangy guy who did a really nice job at Florida State. What's your opinion on Jones?
So I grew up with my mom basically saying that luck is when opportunity meets preparedness. And I think that's a huge situation that has happened with Jarian Jones. You have a player that's been doing nothing but trying to push himself to that next level. And then now in the offseason, you have a player like Ronald Darby go yep. ahead and get put on the roster here. And now the Jags are thinking that maybe we may have a great combination. It seems like it's a trend going on in the NFL of being able to have and pair players together that played in college or at least come from the same alma mater. So I think that was a huge play and huge opportunity for him to be prepared for the opportunity, but then have Ronald Darby be there as well for them to potentially match up.
Yeah, he feels like he's going to be a slot guy. He's going to be your nickel defensive back. But as Dave Campbell, that former head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, just told us, he's got the skills and the athleticism at 6 foot 191 and running a 4.4 that, if asked, many believe he could be a guy that could be a cover corner
yeah.
in the National Football League.
Agreed. And we talked about this earlier with Jared, where Jared Verse has been able to show his game that he could play the run as well as the pass. And that's where Jarian Jones has been able to do that too. So having the opportunity and the skill set to be able to play that inside as well as be able to play that cover corner position allows you that opportunity to be a utility guy to where, especially when there's injuries, you're able to get around the field a little bit more. And I think that played a huge role, as well as they said that it's his energy, it's his yeah. attitude, it's his approach to the game. So being able to utilize him there, especially sometime maybe on special teams as well, will be huge for him.
Yeah, and he's a physical guy. I mean, he's someone who had, you know, plenty of tackles, including behind the line of scrimmage, got to the quarterback, forced some fumbles, had 3 interceptions, including the game saver against the University of Miami. So he does a lot of different things. I mean, we're just talking about Jalen Ramsey, a very physical corner, you know, maybe one of the greats to ever come out of there. But it feels like there are some corners where, yeah, their expertise is cover, their expertise is the physical side. It does feel like here with Jones that you're getting a multiple football player.
Exactly. And first of all, let's say he's a Seminole, right?
Yep.
So Seminoles, we get after that.
Yep.
Especially when it comes on the defensive side of the ball. So there is a culture that gets built from any defensive coordinator that comes in. You have to push that Seminole culture, and that's what we come from. We come from hard-nosed, physical football, especially on that defensive side. So if any defensive back wants to really compete and play well at Florida State, you're going to have to come down and get your nose dirty.
Niall Lawrence Stample, our guest, business owner right here in town with Niall Lawrence Stample Cleaning, and he joins us here when we get into the Garnet and Gold. We've talked a ton about Fisk, a ton about Verse. They both go out to L.A. We'll see what happens there. The Buffalo situation is very intriguing to me with Keon Coleman. First of all, I had no idea that he had this type of personality. I didn't get that from him this past year coming out of Tallahassee. I don't know if they had him under wraps or what it was, but his personality has really taken off. And, you know, they put him in a position now in Buffalo with Diggs gone, with Gabe Davis here. He could be maybe the 2, but possibly the number 1 go-to wide receiver immediately as a rookie for the Buffalo Bills.
He sure can. And I think it was the opportunity there is huge. And I think that he'll present himself in order to be able to take that and take full advantage of it. And I love that for him. Obviously, the stars kind of aligned for his situation there in Buffalo. But in terms of his personality, I think he's always sort of been like that. I don't think you get as much coverage when it comes to that backside play at Florida State. But also, holy smoke, you're really building your craft at Florida State, especially this the year that he had and the year that he was in. You're more or less trying to figure everything out and make sure that you could get to that next level. He has achieved a massive triumph. So being able to go and get picked in the second round, the first pick of the second round, him coming in, he's extremely happy. It's time to celebrate. It's time to take a little bit of a step back and enjoy the moment. And I think that that's what he was able to do at Buffalo for these first few days. And I think it is an awesome situation because he is able to show people that, one, he can lock in, but also it's a good opportunity to say, hey, I can kind of relax a little bit. I can have a good time because when it comes time to turn it on, you obviously know that I can do that.
Yeah, I just wish we got to see it a little bit more.
Yeah, agreed.
At Florida State. But, you know, I understand that, first of all, it didn't feel like it used to be. There's so much media now that I think some of these kids kind of get tired of it. But also, when you're a coach, they don't allow the assistants to talk the way they once did, maybe once a week with both coordinators or what have you, but very rarely positional coaches. And you know, it's not like the old days where you go to the locker room and interview the guys either after games. And certainly, you know, when I was doing it, you could bring them in from the SID, sports information directors, to talk with them all. But it's just not that way.
No, it's not. And as a player, so looking at a player's perspective, the only time you're really talking to the media are going to be times that you probably don't necessarily want to. So it's going to be after games, maybe after a big game and you had a great game, you might want to talk to them. But typically you're pretty tired after a game, or it's going to be some sort of media day, or it's some sort of spring practice where you've already had such a long day, you're doing so many things, and this is just another thing to pile onto your plate. Where all the time that we've been able to watch Keon during this time with Buffalo has been just celebratory stuff. He's in the clothes that he wants to wear. He's comfortable. He's happy. He's just got signed to make a good amount of money. Like, there's so much reasons on why he is in the level of mentality that he is for this past few days.
See, I always thought that collegiate athletes would use the media because you see so many former football players who elect to become a broadcaster. And if you're really good, you're going to get that opportunity. You're going to get it over someone else. But if you're average or not so good and, you know, you want that to be your next field, a lot of these ex-football players either end up becoming broadcasters or coaches. And obviously in both businesses, you need to know people, but some take advantage of it. Others just don't. I guess that's the best way to say it.
Yeah.
Hey, what a sad, sad story. This week, I know we were talking about it off air, but Florida State lost one of their former quarterbacks, the Rooster, Marcus Outsen, at 46 years of age.
Yeah, man, so sad, and feel so sorry for their family.
Yeah, I mean, it was Sharon Dorsey from Jacksonville not too long ago. When I cover these, and I always look at them as kids, and they're passing, man, it really hurts the heart. It really does. And it just seems like it's more and more and more. We can't go a week by without, us losing someone in the world of sports. But I guess it was a rare disorder. And I know it really hurt Seminole fans everywhere.
It really did. And it's a sad moment. And it's something to help kind of reflect and just be thankful for all the time that you have and really take advantage of it. But it is really a sad day just because, yeah.
So it was, 7 to 10 years later for you in the 98 year, he comes in, beats Wake. I mean, mm-hmm. This is when Patrick Kearney breaks the neck of Chris Wenke.
Yeah.
Dan Kendra shredded his knee. So you go to a third stringer, he beats Wake. Gets the ball to Peter Warrick, beats Florida.
Yeah, in Doak.
Yes.
In Doak. Yeah, that has been a huge game.
Yeah, and then I go out to Tempe, and it was at the old Arizona State, the old Sun Devil Stadium there in Tempe, Arizona, and they just, you know, they couldn't get the ball to Peter Warrick. Tennessee was the better team, but, you know, he had a chance to come off the bench and win a national title for Florida State. It didn't work out well, but I think he'll always be remembered for those three things.
Yeah, and it's so cool to watch when players are able to come and really answer the bell. It's such a cool thing just because they're always ready, and sometimes they answer and sometimes they don't, but he was able to.
All right, give us before we say goodbye, give us a minute here on Deion and his son. So tremendously talented. I'm a big fan of Deion, always have been. I find myself defending him on about every issue. But this young kid who goes off to Austin Peay is aggravated, said, Deion never gave me the time, you know, he never gave me any attention. And, you know, his son responds by saying he must have been mid. Why Deion and his son make comments like this?
I'm really not sure, and it sucks because I'm the same way. I love Deion, and I think he's a huge reason on why Florida State has the national eye like they have, and was able to build off the backs of players like him, as well as Odell Higgins. I'm always going to give him a shout out.
Oh, yeah. Adebarto.
Yeah, right? But I will say that it's something that I, especially when I saw it, it's just, if we're going to say that there's some issues here and we do things for clicks and do things for at some point you have to prove them wrong, right? And this way of proving them wrong would have been just to say nothing at all and leave it alone. And I always tell my kids that it is about focusing on the main thing. Let's keep the main thing the main thing. And when those distractions start to really play a key role in your life, I feel like that's when you end up straying away. So it's a tough situation because obviously I love Deion, but it's something that I really can't support just because it's not, I don't think, a good example to set for your team, much less your son.
Yeah, it makes very little sense to me. I mean, I don't even know who this young man is. He went to Austin Peay, and I guess he's transferring out again, following his coach to a lesser job. But, I mean, his son could be the top pick in the draft next year. Mm-hmm. Deion Sanders is maybe the greatest cornerback to ever play in the game. Don't you just look at that and be like, who?
Yeah.
And move on?
And just move on.
Why respond to something so – and I'm not trying to belittle this young player at formerly at Austin Peay, but you're so above that. Why even take the bait?
Yeah, and it sucks because it's just all you do is just feed in to some of the negative comments that have been going out about Colorado, and it's one of those things that you look at and you're just like, listen, let's try to move on from this as quickly as possible.
All right, Niall Lawrence Stample, tell us about Niall Lawrence Stample Cleaning. What's the latest?
Yeah, man, we're doing a lot of really cool projects in terms of like local businesses in town, as well as a ton of residential for window cleaning, house washing, sidewalks, curbs, anything that you guys would actually need. And follow us. I keep saying this, follow us on Instagram at NLS Cleaning. That is going to be the best place to reach out to us, as well as be able to see what we're doing in the community. It is a really, really cool to watch some of the projects that we have going on and some of them that we'll be putting up very soon.
And you got that specials as well. Yep. You go on every once in a while, you have the blinking light or whatever.
You get a flash. We have the flash specials coming on. And sometimes they're super quick because they get snatched up. So you have to be really following us and engage. It's been awesome.
Outstanding. Good seeing you.
Thank you. Good seeing you, Rick.
Niall Lawrence Stample, ladies and gentlemen, formerly of the national championship, Florida State Seminoles, also played with the Cleveland Browns. All right, let's get you involved with the program. 641-1010, best way to get on in on the text line, which is brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. You can get us there or on Twitter. That's Ballou, B-A-L-L-O-U, 1010XL.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballou on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, with you for another 35 minutes. Hacker Nation will join you at 8. Thank you, as always, to both Dave Campo and Niall Lawrence Stample. What's going on over there, JJ? Friday night?
It is. I'm excited. Big Saturday ahead of us. We got a Friday night. Couple basketball games. We have a massive Stanley Cup playoff game 7 Saturday as well.
Orlando going to win tonight?
Well, they're tied right now, or they have a 2-point lead. I think they'll win just because the home team has literally won every single game in this series. Do I think they'll win in Cleveland this weekend? Probably not, but I'll go with Orlando tonight. Yeah.
Tied at 15, 5 minutes to go in the first. Clippers, Mavericks tonight at 9:30. On ice, we are underway as well. Two Western Conference matchups going on. Unlike last night's 9 o'clock Eastern time start between Philadelphia and New York. Right now, Vancouver and Nashville, no score. Midway through the first tonight, Dallas can knock off the defending Stanley Cup champion, the Las Vegas Golden Knights. Boston tonight, Boston tomorrow is going to be nothing outside of aggravation and being totally petrified.
Nervousness.
85 to 90% of the listening audience, 85 to 90% of the fans in Boston are convinced that they're going to lose Game 7. I don't care if you're an internal optimist. You just believe that after what happened a year ago, they think Lightning's going to strike again. Tell you.
And looking at the odds right now, you can get Toronto plus 122.
Oh, man. And you would think that the pressure would be on Toronto because they haven't won a Stanley Cup since 1967. But the way that Boston has, you know, a year ago losing games 2, 5, and 7 at home, and then now this year losing 2 and 5 at home with Game 7 coming up tomorrow night. We'll see.
They kept the is it a manager or head coach or what do they call him?
Yeah, it's a coach. Jim Montgomery.
He's still there from last year, right?
Right.
What if he loses this series?
It's fascinating because he's so good in the regular season.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, his record is like, you know, he's probably won like more than 100 games with like 40 losses or something crazy like, or, you know, 30. He's probably like 130 or 135. I mean, he's just incredible. But the way that the league is, 16 teams make it in, and if you get bounced in the first round again. I saw that Boston has lost 5 straight game sevens.
Oh, my God.
In the National Hockey League. Okay? Now, they've won series and moved on. They've won first round, second round series and moved on. But they have lost 5 straight game sevens. And many of those have been in that garden. They lost to Chicago in the Stanley Cup Finals in that garden. They lost to St. Louis in the Stanley Cup Finals in a game seven in the Boston Garden. And we remember what happened last year. So history is not kind.
So he's 112-32-20 in the regular season with Boston.
And, you know, Butch Cassidy, who coached here for the Jacksonville Lizard Kings and had a couple of years in D.C., then went back down to the minors, did a real nice job in Providence, the, you know, basically the AAA affiliate of the Boston Bruins, and was really good in Boston. But, you know, some players were whining. Bergeron and Krejci and I can't even think of the younger guy who's still on the team now, who actually had a really good game one for Boston, but hasn't done much since. How come I can't think of his name? It'll come to me here in just 1 second. But it's like everything else in life now, that if a coach is too demanding, if a coach gets on, Jake DeBrusque, he was the major crier. Go back and look at his numbers 3 years ago. He was a disaster. So they fired Butch Cassidy. What does he do? He goes over for 1 year to Las Vegas and wins the Stanley Cup. 1 year. So anyway, yeah, it will be exciting. 9171 says, Blue, generational talent is the adjective you are looking for, not superstar. No, it's not. No. There's a difference there. Generational talent, I mean, I think I've used that word here once with this franchise, and that's on Trevor Lawrence. I didn't call Jalen Ramsey a generational talent. I didn't call Jimmy Smith or Mark Brunell a generational talent. Generational talent is the elite of the elite of the elite. And
it's Patrick Mahomes.
Yes.
You know?
It's very rarely used.
It's Aaron Donald.
I was going to say it's very rarely used for a non-quarterback, but right. Aaron Donald would be a prime example. Lawrence Taylor
right.
is a generational talent. Reggie White is a generational talent. What I'm saying is have some superstars. Have some guys that are, you know, top five at their position. A top five back, a top five receiver. You know, as great as Chase is and Jefferson is and Tyreek Hill is and all these, I mean, is anyone so far ahead where they're generational? No. To me, a generational wide receiver would be Randy Moss or Jerry Rice.
Someone that much better at their position than everyone else yes. in their generation.
Yeah. So I think I have the adjective down. I think you and I are just far apart, the 9171, in what our definition of this is. Michael Irvin fired today.
Sad.
It is sad because, you know, he's one of those guys, whenever you hear a story with Michael Irvin, the answer is guilty, right? Michael Irvin's involved in something. Oh, it's Michael Irvin's fault. He's guilty. These charges that, you know, the charges that were immediately thrown his way from the hotel, the video surveillance show that he did nothing wrong. But apparently the story goes is that the NFL Network did not want him to press charges. I don't know if it was the Marriott or what hotel chain it was, but he didn't listen to him. And I guess they settled out of court. My understanding is that Michael Irvin got a really good paycheck out of it. You know, he was kept off the air for a very long time. Remember, they sent him home from the Super Bowl.
Immediately.
Yeah, Michael Irvin was guilty and had to prove his innocence. They sent him home.
And if it wasn't for that videotape.
Oh, I know.
Everybody would still think he's guilty.
Right.
And I didn't realize that. So you're saying the NFL, who probably is one of their big sponsors, was insert this hotel brand,
mm-hmm.
was like, we can't have one of your employees trying to sue us for hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right.
Tell him to chill out on that. And he basically told him to go, you know.
So you know what happened?
They fired his ass.
A Friday afternoon, 5 o'clock news dump. They skirted right into the weekend by doing this. I've always been a big fan of Michael Irvin, not only as a player, but I have always enjoyed his commentary.
He brings the energy, and he's hilarious.
Him and Dion used to be great on the NFL Network.
I agree. And they also got rid of their main show.
I know.
Which is like basically the sports center of the NFL Network.
Total Access.
I'm assuming they're going to bring it back in a different, you know, brand it a different way, call it something else. But it's hilarious to me that the NFL, who makes so much bread, is like cutting back on their television channel, which in the grand scheme of things, it's probably like a percentage of, you know, revenue, a percentage of a point of their revenue every single year.
It's cruel. It is. And, you know, today, from my understanding, is most of the staff of Total Access was let go. The majority of the staff, the behind the scenes, everyone, the producers, the guys who, you know, cut up all the tape. I can't even imagine. I've never really been TV, so I don't have any idea what really goes into that. But, you know, the guys that are
me,
you know, working hard behind the scenes, some of them probably living paycheck to paycheck. And the, you know, the NFL makes so much money. Do they really have to cut that apart?
Exactly. Meanwhile, you got Goodell on TV like literally last week going, yeah, we'll do 18 games.
Yeah,
of course.
But it feels like they're giving up. It does. It feels like they're kind of giving up.
You mean the NFL Network?
Yes.
Like with the channel.
Yeah.
I agree. I don't even have it. So I couldn't tell you if it's a good channel, bad channel, whatever. We always have in the studio, and they just seem to be always playing like old games and stuff. But I do enjoy it for like the training camp coverage.
Love it. Love their training camp coverage.
That's really the only time, only channel. I guess ESPN does a good job nowadays too. But, you know, they go from camp to camp. They usually have a person on the ground at every camp. And, yeah, I enjoy that when we have it on in the studio. But like I said, most people don't have cable anymore, dude. Like, most people aren't even able to watch the NFL Network.
Yeah. I used to love the morning show when I get up and watch it. You know, I used to run till like 1, you know, but they've totally destroyed that.
Speaking of that, Kay Adams, I've seen her live on location at the Kentucky Derby.
I saw the hat.
Looking absolutely spectacular.
Did you see her quote?
No.
It said, talk derb.
Derby to me.
No, like it was that. Derb. And I loved it. I miss her a tremendous one. So she's actually gonna be, I don't know, she may be out there with people or something like that, or who knows, or maybe she's doing her actual show out there.
Yeah, she is. Whatever it's called.
Mm-hmm. Walker Buehler is gonna start on Monday. How about that? 2 years in the making for the ace of the Los Angeles Dodgers.
One of my favorite pitchers to watch.
Gonna get the baseball. Bounce it back from the Tommy John injury. Maybe Stephen A. Smith will call him a whatever.
Yeah, so if you haven't heard, Stephen A. Smith on First Take was like complaining about Trout being injured, and he said basically, I mean, how can these baseball guys keep getting hurt? It's not like they play football or basketball. Nobody's hitting or running into them. Like, dude.
Stay in your lane. I mean, listen.
They play every day. They're still running around like, oh, man. That was a hot take.
Yeah, we've always had fun with baseball injuries. You know, oh, I felt the twinge. You know, he's gone for a month.
Yeah.
But, I mean.
That's an absurd.
Come on, Stephen A. I mean, Stephen A's really good with the NBA. He's really good with the NFL. He obviously doesn't know anything at all about Major League Baseball to make the comments that he made after a torn meniscus for Mike Trout. Okay, a torn meniscus.
Acting like other athletes would have played on that or something in different sports. I'm not sure what he meant, but whatever, man.
Hey,
he's there for the laughs and for the clicks and for the ratings, and that's what he gets.
All right, finally, before we hit this break, this Patrick Beverley deal last night was one of the most incredible moments I've ever seen in a post-game locker room setting. Patrick Beverley told ESPN's Melinda Adams, do you subscribe to my podcast?
Subscribe.
She said, yeah. She said, no. He refused to allow her to ask questions. And then she said, all right, I won't ask a question. Someone else was. She had the microphone there. He pushed the microphone away and said, you know, no, I'm not going to do it. Now, reportedly, he has apologized to her today, she said. But, I mean, there's been the Bobby Bonilla situation. There's been the Ryan Lee. I mean, there's been situations where guys have gone after members of the media because they didn't like what they wrote or like what they said. But there's never been a, hey, I'm not going to talk to you because you don't subscribe to my podcast.
That's new media, new sports media. And guess what? That was the least egregious thing he did yesterday. The cameras caught him at the end of the game on the sideline throwing, chucking a basketball pretty damn hard at two women who are sitting behind the bench not looking at him. And so they just both get, blasted in the head by the ball. And then he gets the ball back and throws it at the person he meant to throw it at. And of course the cop comes over and is admonishing and holding back the fan, not doing anything about the guy who literally just assaulted three people. It just shows athletes, and they get away with literally assault. They get away with anything on and off the field. It's crazy. Professional athletes, man. They are the elite of the elite in our culture. It's so stupid. But, yeah.
Second only rock stars.
Yeah. And then he goes, or maybe politicians. And then he goes to.
Ooh, now talk dirty to me.
Backstage, or not backstage, speaking of bands. But he goes, you know, in the locker room. And apparently he didn't realize this lady is, the most beloved person in the history of ESPN. Because immediately you saw, every person that's ever worked there come out of the woodwork and be like, hey, this is so-and-so. She's worked there for 40 years. Everybody loves her. No one's ever said a bad thing about her. This guy's a turd. And so he had to apologize. ESPN literally banned him from their shows. So, yeah, he did come out to his credit and say he has to be better. But to me, the throwing the ball at a woman, that's way nastier than what he did in the locker room.
Oh, there's no doubt. Absolutely no doubt about that. All right, let's take our final break of the night, get you ready for Hacker Nation, who's 20 minutes away. We'll put our final spin on this one on a Friday edition. I'm off next week, but already looking forward to Rookie Minicamp, which will be on Sunday and Monday, a week from Sunday and Monday. So we'll have plenty to get into once I do return. Final thoughts coming up on the other side.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I'm sure a lot of people this weekend are going to be tuned into the CJ Cup Byron Nelson out in McKinney, Texas. How about the rookie, Jake Knapp? 64s both on Thursday and Friday, 14 under. Remember earlier in the year, he won. At the age of 29, he's a rookie. He's already earned $2,553,000. He's 25th right now on the PGA Tour money list. And he's obviously put himself in really good shape with 36 holes to play to cash another enormous check coming up this weekend. But, you know, JJ, I'm just looking at the leaderboard here, and it's like, oh, boy. Troy Merritt, Matt Wallace, Kelly Kraft,
yeah,
Keith Mitchell, Davis
not,
Riley.
Not one of the events where they have a $20 million purse.
Mm. No, it's only 9.5, yeah.
The week right before the PGA, though, they are having a huge event on the tour. One of those, God, I don't even remember what they call them. But basically the ones where they raise the purse to $20 million and all the players, all the big names play in it.
That's going to be out at in Charlotte at Wells Fargo.
So hopefully we'll see Scotty on his, you know, he hasn't won any tournament outside of or after April in his entire career. So this is sort of the time to show us that you are that much better than everybody else.
Quail Hollow, and I remember years and years ago asking Jim Furyk, you know, they want to call it the gauntlet around here, which I don't agree with. Don't force a name on something. 16, yeah. Very scoreable. 17, obviously, the intimidation. 18, arguably the hardest golf hole on the course over at the stadium. But I asked him, is there another course that rivals that? And this is probably 8-10 years ago. He said, yeah, Quail Hollow coming in, 16, 17, and 18. So next week they'll play for $20 million at Quail Hollow. There's also another PGA Tour event. That'll be in Myrtle Beach at the Dunes Golf and Beach Club for $4 million. So a little bit of a difference.
I always love that when they have two events at the same weekend and you really know where you are on the tour, whether you're invited to one or not. Speaking of golf, thanks to one of our texters for letting us know, happy 34th to the legend, Brooks Koepka.
I saw that. Brooksy.
I think Liv is in like some Asian country today.
Yeah, there's more trash coming out of there now. A caddy said that 25% of the guys wish they didn't go. Well, you know, give back the money and come. You know, if you don't want the money, I mean, you got to be kidding me. You can't have it both ways. You made hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, and you know, you got away from the competitiveness. Obviously, golf's going to have to do something to fix this because the ratings have plummeted on the PGA Tour. Hey,
Singapore, by the way.
Is that where they are?
Yeah, they tee off tonight at 9:15 on the CW if you want to watch late night golf.
Oh, very cool. We don't have time to do this now because it's really thorough, but man, is collegiate athletics going to change. If you think what we're dealing with right now is unusual and weird, how bizarre is it going to be when they actually put together this structured plan, almost like a salary cap, that in Title IX is spoken, that they're creating so many more scholars. I mean, as much as we love the NIL, okay, and it works for certain sports in certain, at certain universities, right? Still, the non-revenue generating sports aren't bringing in a ton of money on NIL. They're bringing in some. Well, that is going to change for the better, okay? It's going to be more equal. And they're saying that blue blood programs, power programs, are going to be spending as much as $30 million a year over the next 10 years for a settlement because these players were not paid throughout the NIL. But it's also going to affect transferring. It's going to affect the size of scholarships. Some are going to grow. Others are going to remain the same. For instance, they're talking about expanding in baseball. They've already, I wasn't even aware of this, the NCAA increased a football roster limit in the preseason from 110 players to 120 players. But this is actually going to be more now of like a league. And I need to learn more on it as these meetings will continue. But I don't think you're going to have superstars, you know, getting $10, $11 million a year. I think it's going to be under some sort of a revenue, you know, distribution cap for athletes. Now, I don't know what they can get outside of that. Again, this is a gray area. I need to learn more. But they're talking about this probably in 2026, maybe as early as 2025, but I guess 2026 is really the expected time that this could take place. But it's going to get an even weirder down the road here, JJ.
Especially, you know, after the players eventually make a union. I don't know when, but that would be, I guess, the next step towards, you know, if they're in a league and they're going to be getting paid from the schools a certain amount, if they're going to have like a salary cap type system, then naturally you're going to have a players union. And yeah, I love the players getting paid. I just hate the portal. Yeah. And for some reason, like NIL and the transfer portal has been like mixed up in this mess. Even though, you know, like the Canes today just got a massive defensive tackle.
Canes have gotten some good plays.
Michigan
they got a wide
State.
Receiver.
Yeah, like the Canes are doing good in the portal, but that doesn't mean I have to love it.
No.
I liked college football the way it was. I just wish these players could have gotten paid. When they do become more of a league, though, I think we're going to have way less of that portal stuff. Already this spring, we expected like craziness in the transfer portal, and luckily we didn't really get it.
Yeah, and that's part of it. Yeah, that's part of it is protecting more and more of these kids who are transferring, more requirements on it, including graduating and things along those lines. Of course, that would be longer throughout their NFL career. All right, that's going to do it. Magic up by a bucket, 34-32 against the Cavaliers, 7:50 to go in the second quarter. Thank you to Dave Campo. Thank you to Niall Lawrence-Stample. I'm out for a week, so I will talk with you a week from Monday. And again, that'll be on the heels of a two-day Jaguar rookie minicamp. I don't check the text line. I'm always available on Twitter. That's Blue1010XL. Hackers next. For JJ LaSalva, I'm Rick Ballew. I'm off a week. I'll talk with you a week from Monday.